Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're listening to the Ref Recap Podcast on 960theref.com. Here are your hosts, Sam Franco and Ryan Goldstein.
All right, welcome back into another exciting episode of the Ref Recap Podcast right here on 960theref.com. Sam Franco and Ryan Goldstein along with you. Plenty for us to get to today on this episode of the podcast as Georgia gets a big win over the Auburn Tigers this past weekend between the hedges in Sanford Stadium. If you can't tell, my voice feeling a little bit of the effects of that game, or not so much of the game because, you know, I can't cheer in the press box, but after the game, and I'll just leave it at that. Also, some crazy upsets in college football, and the Falcons picked up a loss, but they do hit the bye week at 6-4, so we'll get to all that coming up. But Ryan, how was your weekend, my friend?
Man, it was good. I was excited to come in here today. Sometimes we do these podcasts, and I'm like, oh man, okay, we gotta do the podcast, but I'm like, oh, the results of the weekend sucked. Like, we're gonna have to talk about the Falcons being bad, or we're gonna have to talk about the Dogs being terrible. But look, 2 weeks in a row, Georgia gets wins. We're now 6-4, and a couple weeks ago, we were sitting in here talking about, okay, are we going to even be bowl eligible? Now it's like we could finish the season 8-4 with the chance of getting a ninth win come bowl season if we finish the season out strong. A phenomenal, phenomenal effort by the defense in the second half, not giving up a first down at all. And the thing is, listening to Kirby Smart after and the press conference that he just had, he sounds so much like Nick Saban. It's like you want to give, you're like, oh man, he's going to give the team so much credit. He's going to be like, this is awesome. He goes, well, you have to give some credit to Auburn because they kind of just screwed up and we took advantage of that. And I'm like, come on, be excited. You just beat Auburn. You're 6-4 now. This was the signature win you were looking for. If you're a Dog fan, you got to be excited. Obviously, there's still a lot of things to work on, but enjoy the win. I mean, like, one of my buddies texted after the game. He goes, so how about that third and goal play? I'm like, we don't win that many games. We need to be excited about this.
Yeah, but now that we've had a couple of days, we can dissect that third and goal play, which I thought was asinine. Like, you had already run a very similar play in the game, and it didn't work. In fact, it blew right up in your face with Terry Godwin throwing the interception. There's a time and a place for trick plays, and I just don't think that was it.
This is my thing, though. I guess, you know, with Jim Chaney, you're kind of, it's like people will call him out for being too predictable, and then people call him out for being too ridiculous. Now, obviously, you want to try to find somewhere in the middle.
That happy medium.
But it's like you can't have both. You can't want the guy to not run the ball three plays in a row or throw it three downs in a row. But then when he does something crazy, you're like, well, why would you ever do that? Well, so do you just want him to run it up the middle? I mean, there's probably a better play call there. But at the same time, he thought it was going to work. It actually wasn't as bad. When I looked at it again, I was like, oh, that actually didn't turn out to be as bad as I thought it was compared to the first play where Terry Godwin just – either whether he thought he was throwing it out of bounds, and then he throws it to Trey Matthews, and it's like, really, Trey Matthews?
Well, predictable play calling isn't about one specific instance in the game. You know, it's about the overall play calling. So I just think that in that instance, you could have come up with something that was, you know, a little better in terms of the situation you were in. You know, in that kind of situation, I don't think you take the ball out of the hands of your best player, so to speak. And some would say, well, actually, it did go back into Jacob Eason's hand, but he just couldn't catch it. But that's not what I'm talking about. What I mean is, you know, Dave and I were talking about this in the morning show, and I used the saying, you know, dance with a girl that got you here. And Eason had a very good series up to that point. It was a lot of running, but Eason was doing very well at hitting some targets. I mean, the dude has so much zip on these throws. I mean, he was hitting some stuff in windows that we haven't seen a Georgia quarterback hit in a long time. So I just think that you either let him do something there or you hand the ball off, but that was just a really bizarre play call in that opinion. And when Blankenship hit that field goal, Chris Brain was sitting next to me in the press box, and we both looked at each other and went, oh, we're going to lose 14-13.
Right. I mean, obviously, if they come back down and score, but it's an unconventional play call, and it wasn't what I would have called in that instance. But look, these guys do a lot more, you know, understanding what personnel is on the field to know when they think plays can run. So it was odd to say the least. But fortunately, it all worked out in the end, us getting the 13-7 victory. Look, if you had told me last week, Georgia's going to beat Auburn, but they're not going to score an offensive touchdown, I would have been like, well, our special teams are terrible, so we're probably not going to score there. But speaking of special teams, a 30-yard punt return from Isaiah McKenzie. Auburn only allowed, I think it was -2 mm-hmm. yards on punts allowed. Mm-hmm. And Kirby made a point in the press conference to say, look, you guys see that stat. That's something that we worked on all week. So give him props there for the special teams making a play when they needed it. It's exciting. I mean, look. The last time Georgia beat a top 10 team coming to Sanford Stadium was Auburn 2 years ago in 2014. Yeah. So
they also held them to 7 points.
Right, and that was a 34-7 victory.
Yes.
Look, we have Auburn's number. You know, 9-2 in the last 11 games. The only time they've beaten us, they either went to the national championship or won a national championship.
Yeah, and looking at that kind of having Auburn's number thing, it's almost like this series has turned into the opposite of Georgia and Florida from what Florida has been able to do to Georgia, and more specifically in the 90s and the early to mid-2000s. Where that was just a dominated series by Florida. And that's kind of what Georgia's doing to Auburn right now.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. It's great. I mean, I'm ecstatic right now because the conversation has shifted, which makes everybody happier. I mean, look, I was still of the opinion that you could go 8 wins or 6 wins. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really matter if you're not winning a national championship or an SEC championship, but the morale is just better. You know, even if we just finished the season 8-4, we didn't win 10 games like we did last year, but you're finishing strong on a high note if you can win all 4 of your games in November. And there's still 2 tough games left. I mean, let's not overlook Louisiana Lafayette,
let's not
obviously overlook Tech.
Who just beat Virginia Tech this past week.
Right, but you feel good about where the team is headed. I mean, I was thinking about this weekend. If you're looking to next year and who's coming back offensively, obviously you lose 3 offensive linemen, you're going to lose your center and your 2 tackles. But in terms of skill players on the outside, everybody's coming back. You have your quarterback back. Obviously, running back was still, you know, up in the air whether or not Sonny Michel or Nick Chubb decide to return. That'll be probably a storyline we talk about in the coming weeks. But, I mean, it's a lot of young talent here at Georgia, and if, you know, you can corral that into really good football players, there could be something special that takes place in Athens.
Oh, I totally agree with you. And you've got to look at some of the guys, and a guy that won't be back next year, but who just won the SEC Defensive Player of the Week Award, Maurice Smith, the impact that guy's been able to have despite only being in Athens a week before the season started is remarkable. And the pick 6 there, Georgia's only touchdown of the day, just, for him to not only be in the position to get the interception but to fight his way into the end zone was, one of the biggest plays, if not the biggest play of Georgia's season.
Yeah, a lot of props to him. I was kind of skeptical about the whole thing. I was like, well, okay, he'll come. He'll have some impact, but he's just going to be, he'll be like the 4th cornerback. He'll play in the nickel. But, no, he's been huge. He made plays the first game against North Carolina, and like you said, he had that touchdown on Saturday. He said he's 3-1 in his career against Auburn. He's like, I just hate those guys. I mean, it's awesome. I mean, you feel that. And look, in terms of 2 Alabama guys helping Georgia beat Auburn, they helped Alabama in the process, now clinching Alabama an SEC West title, which now means the Iron Bowl's significance has gone down dramatically.
Yes, exactly. And CBS could not have been too happy about that. But, one thing I thought was pretty funny in Kirby's weekly press conference was, and I believe it was our man Jake Rowe, who we talked to on Wednesdays on the morning show, asked about the black jerseys. You know, can you confirm you're wearing black jerseys this weekend? And Kirby's answer was fantastic. He goes, no, we can't confirm that. No, we have not confirmed that.
It doesn't make sense. Why is everyone so coy here about these jerseys? It's like, look, the more coy you are about it, the more you think you have something to hide. It's like when you ask a friend something and then they start to, dance around the truth. It's just like, if you had just told me from the beginning what the truth was, I probably wouldn't even care. But now these jerseys have gotten to be such a big deal because nobody ever tells us when they're wearing what jerseys.
That's the problem. They make it into this like huge deal, and it's like, I have a theory now about it, though. They're like, they were going to wear it against Auburn, but you get the win against Auburn, and I know that GeorgiaDogs.com, that article that came out in like August, said that, wear black to the Louisiana Lafayette game. You know, was telling people that. Maybe after the win against Auburn, Kirby's, and maybe they're waiting to see what time Tech is.
Oh, Tech has just been announced as noon.
It is a noon kick.
It's a noon kick.
Okay, well, that has just been announced then, but that stinks. I wanted that to be at night. But, the fact that it's at noon, that stinks too, because, it's like right after Thanksgiving, you got all that stuff to worry about. But anyway, that's another story for another day. But my theory would have been if Tech had been at night, maybe they would have done it then. But just based on the fact that they said on Georgia's athletics website that, hey, wear black against Louisiana Lafayette, you would think that that would tell you when they're going to do it.
Right, but now it's like you just wish you were thinking. I mean, obviously you couldn't wear them against Auburn because if you lose the game, then everybody, any detractor of the black jerseys, not that this is what the coaches base their decisions off of, but for us to talk about it, we can do this. All the detractors go, well, it's all because of the black jerseys. You lost to Auburn because you wore black. But it would have been awesome to have worn those Saturday night in Sanford Stadium. But now we have two straight noon games. So you have Louisiana Lafayette at noon, and then you'll have, you're shaking your head over there. What's going on?
How does Tennessee and Vanderbilt get the 7:30 spot over Georgia and Georgia Tech? Georgia just beat Auburn, and Georgia Tech just beat Virginia Tech. That's absurd. That makes me angry. And like, I'm looking at the other ones, and they've got, it's weird, Auburn and Alabama, obviously a 3:30 kick. That is right. The CBS game. But they also have another 3:30 game, Mississippi State and Ole Miss.
So yeah, those are the two worst teams in the SEC West.
I was going to say, you've got the Egg Bowl and the Iron Bowl up against each other. So the Egg Bowl, not going to get many watches outside of, or many views outside of the state of Mississippi there. But I don't understand how Tennessee and Vanderbilt's a better game than Georgia and Georgia Tech. I really don't. And that's the thing. You obviously put that better game, I guess, quote unquote, in prime time.
Well, is the noon game, is it ESPN or SEC Network?
No, it's all there. The only ESPN game that week is LSU and Texas A&M. That's at night on ESPN on Thanksgiving night. Then on CBS on Friday, you have Arkansas at Missouri, which, no thanks. And yeah, then Saturday you've got SEC Network, three SEC Network games and one a CBS game.
Okay.
So,
yeah, I don't get it, weird. But I don't know. It's like, to me, I'm just, you know, it's, I'll get home and you get to watch the Michigan Ohio State game, which will also be at noon.
Well, it still says on this thing too, they haven't announced the times or networks for Florida, Florida State, Kentucky, Louisville, or South Carolina, Clemson. They are, I guess there's a hold being used.
Oh, so one of those will be a noon ESPN game. One of those will be like the 7:45 ESPN. Okay. That makes more sense then, because I was wondering why there was no ESPN game.
I mean, I guess I understand just based on the sense that Tennessee could be playing for a chance to go to the SEC title game, just like Florida could be. And obviously they want to see what Louisville needs to do for the... So I guess now that you talk it out a little bit, it makes more sense. But
at first glance, it just...
No, but just the Tennessee-Vanderbilt one in primetime over Georgia-Georgia Tech doesn't make any sense to me. Georgia and Georgia Tech, I know Georgia Tech hadn't had a great season, but they did just beat Virginia Tech. You got to give them credit for that. And you know what? That's more on Georgia Tech than it is on Georgia.
Yeah, yeah. It's on you guys, nerds.
Exactly. Exactly. But we'll look forward to that game anyway. And I guess one saving grace there is it won't be as cold at noon as it would be at 7:30. So.
Yeah, and with this weather, I mean, I guess today is really the first day that I felt fall. I mean, it's like it was cold this morning. It's, you know, in like the 50s now.
Yeah, it's going to probably warm up to about 70.
It's just one day it's going to be just 40 degrees all day and we're not going to know what to do with ourselves.
No, we're not. No, we're not. But we will cross that bridge when we get to it. So the rest of those games that haven't been announced yet are dependent on some of the other stuff that happens. But how about the crazy, crazy weekend that was in college football? It was just unbelievable, all of the teams that went down, including Clemson, who loses straight up at home to Pitt, unranked Pitt, a Pitt team that is now 6-4, was 5-4 before this game. Michigan losing to Iowa by a score of 14-13. And then USC beating Washington, going into Seattle and beating Washington.
Well, I think the team that benefited the most this weekend is Louisville.
No doubt.
Because Ohio State are still in the same position. Look, if one of them can end up winning the Big Ten championship with one loss, now it hurts one of them in the sense that now with both of them having a loss, whoever the loser of that game is not going to make the playoff with as two-loss team that didn't win a championship. Mm-hmm. I think Washington is now in a position where, you know, they have to win the Pac-12. And I felt that way before. So it's not as if much has changed for them. But I think Louisville is the team that obviously benefits most because I think Clemson will end up still winning the ACC championship, so they'll make the playoff. Alabama is all, you know, but signed and sealed to be the number one spot in the playoff. And then the winner of Michigan, Ohio State, you would think it's that one of those spots. And then Louisville, because they have the best loss of any of those teams being at Clemson. Now, the people that want to say that Louisville should be above Clemson, I don't really get that. If you play another team and you beat them, that should count for something. Head-to-head should be the biggest determining
of
factor.
Of course, if because, you beat someone on
right,
the field,
I mean, I get it. Obviously,
a
Louisville loss is better than the Clemson loss to Pittsburgh, but Clemson beat Louisville. So these people that want to say, well, I'll put Louisville ahead of Clemson, doesn't make any sense to me, and Clemson's going to go to the ACC championship game, not Louisville. So I think Louisville benefits the most, though, from this scenario that took place this weekend. I think it's Washington gets hurt the most, but Michigan and Ohio State are still in the same position they were a week ago. You went out, you go to the playoff.
Yeah, but just crazy. I think Washington probably knocked themselves out of things. I mean, maybe they could get in if they are able to beat Washington State. That Apple Cup game is going to be fantastic, and I got to give credit to you. You know, you were on Washington State early, although they did lose to an FCS team.
They lost their first two games. Yeah,
Eastern Washington, and then I forget who.
I think they lost to Boise State on the road, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. They did lose to Boise in Boise. But since then, they have been phenomenal. You know, drubbing Oregon, drubbing Stanford. Man, 42-16 against Stanford's impressive. And then, you know, this past weekend, they beat Cal 56-21. The weekend before, they beat Arizona 69-7. So Washington State is, you know, I don't think a team that could get into the playoff, but still looking very, very good. And then could be the Pac-12 champ. They're undefeated in the Pac-12 right now.
Right. So it's a big weekend. I believe Washington State plays Colorado this weekend.
They do, and then the Apple Cup.
And then the Apple Cup, and then it'll be the Pac-12 championship. So I think Washington still has a chance, but all the people that felt that Washington didn't have a legit schedule coming into this game against USC, a chance for them to really solidify their spot in the playoff. Exactly. They feel justified. And so now all those detractors are like, well, Washington doesn't deserve a spot. So I think Louisville is a team that benefits most. But it's funny. I mean, now with the playoff, it's like while things are, these losses shake things up a bit, you still feel like the top four or five remain pretty much the same. There's nobody. Whereas in years past, maybe you felt the team coming slowly but surely making their way from, you know, the 16s or the mid-20s to come into the playoff picture. You don't feel like there's that team this year.
Right. And, I mean, you just – the way that the rankings break down, I mean, it's strange now if you look at everything. But right now I'm trying to find the CFP playoff rankings. I make it really hard to find. Okay, here we go. Well, no, that's not it. There we go. Thank you. This sounds really good radio, by the way. But yes, as it stands right now, the teams that were on the outside, Ohio State, Louisville, Wisconsin, the problem is you only had the 2 1-loss teams in Ohio State and Louisville, and then the rest of these teams, other than West Virginia, you know, have two losses, although, you know, could we see a Big 12 champ, West Virginia, who's only got one loss?
So. I think the Big 12 is just so far in the basement that nobody. It's like, we'd have to look so far down, and is it worth it? No. I don't think a Big 12 team has a shot at making the playoff unless, you know, Clemson were to lose the ACC championship game, Michigan, you know, one of these teams loses another game before the Big 10 championship game. I mean, it's just there'd be so many things that have to fall in order for West Virginia, I think, to make the playoff.
If Washington loses to Washington State and you've got two 2-loss teams out there, I think you're going to get two teams from one conference in.
Yeah, but I mean, I think there could be two teams from one conference now with Clemson and Louisville, both coming from the ACC. I think that's the likeliest of scenarios.
I still think a 1-loss Washington, I don't know, that one's tough.
But a 1-loss Washington or a 1-loss Pac-12 champion.
Team, right.
Oh, against a 2-loss team. Well, I think the Big Ten has a shot if Wisconsin were to win the Big Ten championship.
And yeah, then, I guess that could be one.
And then if you felt that Ohio State or Michigan was just that close to, you know, because if, look, Ohio State's already beat them, as has Michigan. Mm-hmm. So if Wisconsin beats them in the Big Ten championship game by a field goal, do you put both of those teams in with two losses?
Ooh, yeah, this is a mess that I'm sure that the people sitting in that room didn't want to have to go through, because you're going to tick some people off when you have a scenario like this. I mean, if you have, like, it was the perfect scenario going into this weekend for all four teams were undefeated, and you're like, oh, okay, it works out perfectly. You knew it wouldn't get in like that, but still. For three of the undefeated teams to go down, that makes the job of the playoff committee much, much harder.
Yeah, well, and I think also people feel that Louisville, like a Louisville-Alabama matchup is a lot more exciting than a Washington-Alabama matchup.
Oh, of course.
Where people feel that at least you're putting Lamar Jackson against the best defense in the country and you can create some storyline behind that. Or Washington is just a team from the West Coast and nobody cares about the West Coast. There's always an East Coast bias, an SEC bias. But, so I think maybe for some people, you know, Washington's loss helps clear the way a little bit. But this is the best part about college football. We wait all year for these 4 months, and they always give us something to be excited about.
All right, so if you had to say right now, and this is just a complete shot in the dark, okay, who the four teams in the playoff are going to be, Who are you going to
give? Oh, I think it'll be Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, and Louisville.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Because I think Clemson's going to win. Do they have another ACC, or are they done the ACC after this weekend?
They'll play. I don't know if they play Cupcake this weekend. Most teams end up playing Cupcakes this weekend. And then they'll play South Carolina.
Well, they do play Cupcake. Weekend. They play Wake. But it is an ACC game.
But
so.
Yeah, but I think then they'll clinch the.
That's the thing. They win this weekend, they clinch the division that they're in, which is one of the ACC divisions. I always forget.
They don't make sense. It's not the North and the South.
It's just much easier when it's directional. But anyway, they clinch their division, and that means Louisville just kind of sits back and, you know, plays Kentucky and just waits.
And they play Houston this week.
That is correct.
Which is obviously not as big of a game as we once thought it would be when we looked at the schedule at the beginning of the season, because Houston has tapered off a little bit, having a loss.
They should drum
and
Houston.
To Navy.
Yeah.
But so it's not with that win. Where at one point we were saying, oh, that win could be something that, you know, pushes you in and propels you into the playoff.
Right.
Now it's just like you need to beat Houston to avoid getting kicked out of the playoff conversation.
So in all honesty, I just think Louisville, you know, if they take care of business their next two games, they don't have to worry about a conference title game, and they probably get in.
I think so, yeah. I mean, I think it's going to be tough now for the Big Ten to get two teams if Louisville doesn't lose another game and Clemson wins the ACC championship game and Alabama, you know, follows suit and wins the SEC championship.
Did you say Michigan or Ohio State?
I said Ohio State.
Yeah, I think I agree with that.
I think Ohio State's better. I don't know. I mean,
it's such a toss up. Just to be different from you, I'll say it's going to be Alabama, Clemson, Michigan, and Louisville.
Okay.
Just to be different. But,
I like it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
And maybe my Washington State pick will come in. They'll continue to win, and a few things will fall their way.
Maybe complete pandemonium happens, and like Louisville loses to Wake this weekend. Then, you know, that's not going to happen probably, but you never know.
That'd be awesome if Washington State made the playoff. Mike Leach in the playoff? Some sound bites.
Oh,
right
no,
there.
Louisville already played Wake.
No, Louisville plays Houston. Clemson plays Wake. That's what you were thinking.
Yeah,
that's what it's been a long weekend for you. It's Monday. You've had a long weekend.
And lots of basketball. Maybe Clemson loses to Wake this weekend, and then that throws everything into complete disarray.
And then my Washington State pick, they just keep hammering it down.
I was going to say, there you go. The long play from our Ryan there. It was a slow burn.
Yeah, hey.
Eventually got it.
A long
there.
Season.
All right. Yeah, it has been a long weekend, but we're glad that Georgia got the win. That's most important around here. But shifting to the Falcons, where they fell this weekend to the Philadelphia Eagles in Philadelphia, and I guess my main question about this game, why on earth did the Falcons go for it on that fourth down when it was over 3 minutes left in the clock? They had all three timeouts and the two-minute warning.
Yeah, I was actually fine with the call. I felt that.
Well, you're giving them a field goal, basically, in that scenario.
Yeah, but I also felt that your offense, this was a time that while your offense hadn't been playing well and your defense, I think, had been exhausted. I mean, the time of possession was completely dominated by Philadelphia, and they were running the ball. I mean, they ended up finishing with 5.5 yards per carry, mm-hmm. which is just ridiculous against, you know, and it's not as if they have an Adrian Peterson or a Melvin Gordon on their team. It's Ryan Matthews, Wendell Smallwood, and Darren
Sproles.
Ryan
Matthews had a hell of a game.
Right. So, I mean, it was one of those things where you felt that I think your defense was pretty exhausted, that at least it's a 4th and 5. I mean, that's a manageable down for an offense that is as prolific as the Falcons have been. Granted, they didn't play very well at all yesterday.
Right.
But you feel that to be able to get 5 yards with Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, and a complement of other people, mm-hmm. that should be something that you should be able to get.
Julio had a brutal drop, man.
That was either the play before or the drive. It was one of those drives, either that drive, and that was kind of when you felt, I mean, Matt Bryant missed an extra point. He missed a field goal. He hadn't missed an extra point since his rookie season. It was 2002 or 2003.
Albeit they've moved them back since then.
Right, but still. And then it's funny because that, not that I think it would have made a huge difference, but that would have changed even if they had hit the field goal from an 8-point game to a 9-point game, which would have made it one possession with the Falcons getting a chance to at least tie the game at the end. But look, the Falcons didn't play well. When you have third down from, you know, 3rd and 12, 3rd and 14, 3rd and 11, 3rd and 10, you're just shooting yourself in the foot. The first two drives they had false start penalties that moved them back. I mean, those are things that you just beat yourself on. So I like to think if I can find a silver lining in this game, you go into the bye week 6-4, which if anybody had told you before the season started, you'd been ecstatic. You would have said, I would take that without a doubt. So you lose by 9 points to Philadelphia, who is a good team, and they've won all their games at home, and they have a solid defense.
Yeah, they're not a bad team. No. Nobody's saying that, but it just feels like it was a game that you could have won, especially when you took the lead and you just your defense was just kind of like a sieve all day. You know,
but there were times when they played well, though. I mean, they had a couple of those, the first drive of the game and the first drive of the second half, Philadelphia just marched down the field and just pounded the ball. But there were times when you felt, okay, this defense, you know, they're showing some life and there's some improvement.
There is improvement, but there's just areas where outside of the defensive line, I mean, the secondary, you know, Jalen Collins was getting picked on all game. And, you know, Robert Alford kind of had to be that, you know, that other guy. And he didn't get picked on as much as Collins did. But still, this team needs Desmond Trufant back in a bad way. And the bye week couldn't have come at a better time with Tevin Coleman being hurt, with Trufant being hurt. So if you can get those guys back after the bye week, it'll definitely help. And you're totally right. At 6-4, you're feeling way better about things than a lot of Falcons fans probably thought you would be. And the Saints losing yesterday in just ridiculous fashion.
And the Panthers also losing.
And the Panthers losing. The Bucs did get a win, but they were playing the Bears and just
The Bears are terrible, yeah.
But, yeah, it was just the way that the Saints lost that game. I mean, that blocked extra point where the Denver returner looked like he stepped out of bounds. But, hey, you know, the NFL getting some calls wrong. Couldn't happen to a nicer bunch of guys, right? but the worst one, yeah, is just that Carolina loss. I mean, they blew a 17-0 lead.
Against Kansas City. It's great. I mean, that's the only real thing you felt I was happy about yesterday was that you maintained your game and a half lead of those other teams. Because while Carolina and New Orleans haven't played great, they've been playing better, and you feel that if you get into a tight race with them late, that's not something you want, especially for there were games where you felt that you could have, you know, taken that lead and really expanded it. Look, the Falcons, the last six games they have, two of them are against the 49ers and against the Rams. Those are games you have to win, and then the other four games, if you can split those, you would go 4-2 and win 10 games, which I think definitely wins you the division. The last other four games would be Carolina on the road, New Orleans at home, and then you have Kansas City and Arizona both in your building.
Oh, 10 wins gets you the division.
So, I mean, the Los Angeles game and the San Francisco games are games that you have to win against teams that are just inferior to you.
Oh, yeah. You have to beat LA on the road. You got to beat the 49ers.
And then the others, if you split, you'd go 10 wins. You go 10-6.
You got to split between the Cardinals and Chiefs. And then, yeah, you got to split between the 49ers, or the Panthers and Saints. Totally agree. But, yeah, you're totally right. Those those two games,
those are must wins.
You have to win those.
Those are must wins because those are just games that you can't say. I mean,
they're bad teams.
They're bad teams, exactly. I mean, I think the Rams, I saw a stat, they do better when they don't score a touchdown. They've won more games. They won yesterday 9-6.
They are ruining Todd Gurley. Like, it frustrates me beyond no end to see Todd Gurley just being floundered and wasted in Los Angeles.
Yeah, and talk about a team on the flip side that continues to impress with a good young running back, the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, my gosh.
Every time I think, I'm like, oh, I wouldn't be that scared of Dallas in the playoffs because they have a rookie quarterback.
I picked Pittsburgh to win this weekend, and I thought they were going to win. I thought Big Ben had a hell of a game, but Ezekiel Elliott and Dak Prescott, man, these two rookies have taken the league by storm. And what was Pittsburgh doing on that last touchdown by Ezekiel Elliott? It was almost like, a gate opened up. It was just like, come to the end zone.
You know, we welcome you.
Nobody touched him. I mean, he just went right up the gut. It was like a halfback dive. It wasn't even like there was any, you know, inventiveness or anything to the play. It was just great blocking by the best offensive line in football, and nobody home for Pittsburgh. So,
but it's exciting, at least as a Falcons fan, looking at the NFC playoff picture as a whole, that while Dallas seems to be kind of ahead above everyone else, and Seattle had a big win last night in New England, those two teams probably are the top. Everyone else, it's up for grabs. I mean, the Falcons can still host a playoff game, especially if they win the division, and maybe if a few things go their way and they play a little bit better down the stretch than we expect, they could be having one of those one or two seeds and get a first-round bye and get a home game. Granted, for the Falcons, it almost might be better for them to just be like the 3 or 4 seed, host the first-round playoff game, and have to play week after week. I don't know if sitting – I mean, there was a year they went 14-2 and hosted Green Bay and got blown out.
Trash.
So it's almost one of those things that I don't think it always works. Maybe it's just better to continue playing, especially if you're playing well.
Yeah, that might be the case. But I think, you know, the Falcons have put themselves in a good position. Now you got to finish. And that's the big question. They obviously capitulated last year. So can they be a team that finishes? we will find out about that. Ryan, any parting shots? That's become a tradition here on the Referee Cap.
The parting shots, just enjoy it. I mean, I say this every week. I either say remain calm or enjoy it, depending on what happens. But you really have to, because the season goes by way too fast. I mean, it's almost 2 weeks left in the Georgia football season, only about a month and a half left in the NFL season. Mm-hmm. Enjoy the wins when they come. Don't worry about third and goal plays. Just enjoy the win, because we beat Auburn here in Athens on Saturday.
That's exactly right. So just as Ryan said, enjoy that win over Auburn. And that will do it for us here on this episode of the Ref Recap Podcast. You can find us on 960theref.com. Follow on Twitter at 960theref. I'm at Sam J. Franco. He's at TheRealRyeGuy19. And we'll be back next week with another exciting episode of the Ref Recap Podcast.